Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah.
You may have heard the phrase, prayer changes things, but my guest today has the science to back that up. Dr. Larry Dorsey wrote a book called Healing Words, The Power of Prayer and the Practice of Medicine. He was on my show about 14 years ago, and I was fascinated by what he had to say then. Since that time, he has become the leading authority on prayer and medicine and how prayer works in our lives. So I'm really, really, really thrilled to be able to have this conversation with him today.
It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series.
Well, welcome again to my Soul Series. So glad you can find time to fit this into your busy schedule. I'm Oprah. And if you share with me an unquenchable curiosity to learn more about that which is greater and more powerful than ourselves, then you are really in the right space, because that's the reason why I created this Soul Series, to be able to talk on the air about things that really matter to all of us, this deep yearning that we have to know the greatest, highest part of ourselves and be connected to that which created us and to understand that that's where we all come from. I'm really happy today because I get to introduce to you Larry Dorsey, who is one of the most respected in his field. He wrote the book, The Healing Words, which I also read, I don't know, almost 15 years ago for the first time. And what's so exciting about that is that when you first wrote that book, you had all these predictions about what would happen. I think in the back of the book, you talked about predictions about what would happen in the world to come. And I would say almost all of them have come true.
You know, Oprah, looking back at those predictions, I think I was a pretty good prophet.
Yes.
Because, as you say, almost all of those have proved to be true. When I made those predictions, I thought that I was probably going out on a limb to the extent that I wouldn't see those come through true in my lifetime.
In your lifetime.
But the pace of change since that book came out, which put prayer forward as something really powerful and the healing response.
Yeah, Healing Words, The Power of Prayer and the Practice of Medicine, which was written 15 years ago.
Yes.
Really, changed the way the medical profession and I think the world looked at prayer.
I'm happy to say that that's true.
Yes. When you wrote this book, Healing Words, did you realize that you could obviously come under attack? Did you feel that you were being a pioneer?
Actually, I did come under attack. I wasn't sure if I could withstand the criticism or not, but I knew that what I had to say was right. And I had something that believers in prayer and spirituality have not had throughout history. It's that pesky little four-letter word called data. And I knew for the first time that it would be possible to use the word prayer and science in the same sentence and hopefully get away with it. And as it turned out, that proved to be true. It came as a shock to most of my colleagues to discover that there were actually what we call double-blind, randomized, controlled experiments looking at the efficacy of prayer and getting well. It came as a shock to me when I first discovered that information. And I felt that we were at a point in history where one, in order to be honest with oneself as a physician, had to take a stand. And I decided to come forward with that. It wasn't clear to me that I could survive professionally doing that.
But were you afraid? Were you afraid?
Yes, I was.
And did you
afraid.
Pray a lot?
Then and now. I still do. But as it turned out, the force of the data, the force of the information spoke for itself. And to my great surprise, researchers began to come out of the closet doing these additional studies, which continued to show that prayer does have a healing effect when you put it to the test in the hospital and the laboratory. You know, when you and I last talked in 1994, there was only one major, large human study in prayer. But since then, Oprah, we have an explosion. We've had an explosion of these kinds of studies. So that if you fast
studies
forward...
Studies that prove through good science, you're saying, through good,
good
science...
compelling, exotic science...
That prayer works.
Yes. We've got about 21 of those studies now. So we've gone from 1 to 21 studies. Over half of them show statistical significance showing that prayer works. It's driven the skeptics nuts because they're dedicated basically to the proposition that we know in advance that consciousness can't operate outside the brain and the body. It's okay to talk about mind-body influences, but to talk about your thoughts, your love, your compassion operating at a distance through intercessory prayer is just over the top for so many critics, and still is. But the data won't go away. It's there, it's firm, and it's abundant.
Well, with over 50 good science experiments proving that prayer results in significant changes in a variety of living beings, wouldn't it seem to reason that by now the scientific community would have difficulty, you know, proving otherwise?
Oh, they have a great deal of difficulty. But there are some people who are so wedded to the physicalistic conception of consciousness. That,
only what I can see.
Exactly. Yeah. That I think no matter how compelling the data becomes for some people, they're still going to stick to their guns and say that there must be something wrong with the studies. But the medical schools have come around. And I think that that's the place to look for indication of where this is headed. If the medical schools take this on, then it's not going away. That speaks volumes for the legitimacy of this whole thing about prayer.
Oh, we're talking to Dr. Larry Dossey, the man who brought us the data on the power of prayer 15 years ago when he wrote Healing Words, The Power of Prayer and the Practice of Medicine. Can you give a specific example for our audience listening who perhaps hasn't read? I'm sure there are a lot of you listening who've not read Healing Words. If any of what we're saying today resonates with you, I would advise that you get that book. That should be one of the standards in your own personal library, I think. Can you give us a specific example where you definitively proved that prayer works?
One of my favorite examples has to do with infertility. Mm-hmm. This study took place in a fertility clinic in Seoul, Korea, in women who really had difficulty getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. They were undergoing in vitro fertilization and embryo transfer in an attempt to have a baby. Unknown to them, they were enrolled in one of these studies in which people were recruited to pray for half of them, but not for the other half. This is what we call a triple-blind study, which means...
Strangers.
Strangers, yes. The people doing the praying were in Canada and Australia and the United States. When they looked at the data, the outcomes, the women who received the prayer from these remote prayer groups had twice the successful fertility rate as the women who were not assigned prayer from these distant individuals. You know, we talk about the odds against chance in these studies. There was only one chance in 1,000 that you could explain this by saying, well, this just happened to, according to chance. This was just a fluke. This is one of the most careful and compelling studies that's been done. But not just in infertility. We've seen these studies now done in patients with advanced AIDS, with heart attack, and several other illnesses as well.
And how does it exactly work, Larry? How does it exactly work? Is it like prayer creates its own vibration, and that vibration or energy has its own frequency level and then changes the vibration of whatever you're praying for?
Well, the short answer is no one knows.
Okay.
That's a hypothesis. I think that we just ought to say out front that this is still very much a mystery. I don't feel uncomfortable saying that we don't know how it works, because in the history of medicine, we often know that something does work before we have a clue about how it does. You can make a long list of those from aspirin, penicillin, and so on. And that's where we stand with prayer now. There are a lot of hypotheses that are being advanced by world-class scholars about how it may work. My favorite comes out of quantum physics. Mm-hmm. It has to do with something called entanglement. What you have in this theory is the idea that even though individuals can be far apart, they can still behave as if they're a single entity. Whereas you change one, the other one changes instantly and to the same degree. We draw on analogies from what happens in the subatomic domain here. Mm-hmm. And if it happens with distant electrons or other particles, the thinking is that this may have a corollary where humans are far apart. It gives us something, a metaphor to hang our head on about how these distant changes may occur when one person has a compassionate, loving thought and the other person at a distance changes in correlation with that person's healing intention, thought, or prayer.
It doesn't matter how far apart they are.
I'm telling you that it doesn't matter. And this has been proved extensively. You know, one of the things that we draw from these experiments is that prayer works as well from the other side of the earth as it does at the bedside. There's even evidence now that it may work in retrospect, that you can pray later and affect the outcome of a person's physical condition, even though you suppose that that has already happened.
Yeah. Well, how do you counsel your patients who are suffering from an illness and praying for wellness and with seemingly no success?
Well, I admit up front that these studies are statistical, and there's no guarantee in any case that when you pray for someone, you're automatically going to see an improvement as a result of the prayer. But if you lump all of the people together, all the cases, and look at it statistically, you can show that, sure enough, for the majority of people, there is an effect. I think we ought to...
So are you better off with more people praying for you? Have you statistically found that the more people that pray for you, the better off you are?
It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way.
You're not. You don't get 10 times the effect from 10 people praying as opposed to one.
You do not.
No, you don't. If I had to select one quality which overrides the number of people praying or even how long they pray, it would be the intensity and the genuineness and the authenticity of love that the praying person has.
Mm-hmm. Over and over we see that again in healing words. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think we have intimations.
It's not the amount, it's the quality of the one.
Quality and genuineness and sincerity.
Yeah.
You know, in real life, we say we pray for our loved ones, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That means we pray unconditionally. We will pray for them no matter what. Why? Because we care for them. And if you talk to healers, Oprah, they'll tell you this. They'll say, it's not the words you use or how long you pray. You've just got to feel it in your heart. And over again, this issue of depth and sincerity and love and compassion rise to the top.
Yeah, there's something about it, the quality of prayer, that I have found for myself, Larry, that there's a praying where you are praying in fear. And I know many of you are listening. You've prayed the prayer. You've prayed. You're praying. But while you're praying, you're afraid already that the prayer isn't going to be answered.
Yeah.
You're afraid already. The energy of the prayer is coming from a fearful place.
Right.
I have found that when you can surrender yourself in prayer, you know, surrender while making the request, but surrender to a will greater than your own, that there is a greater sense of alignment and peace even in the prayer.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 And it has more zip and more pizzazz.
Yeah.
There's power, and you can feel that.
Yeah,
you
and know, it's not just give me, give me, give me, I need, please, please, please.
I just really don't like gimme prayers. I've got to tell you, you know, when I first started writing about this, the role of prayer, I decided that I had to put this to use in my own practice of internal medicine. And so I invented my own prayer ritual where I would go into my office earlier every morning and pray for the patients I was about to make rounds on in the hospital and who would be coming to my office that day. And never once over many years did I ever pray for anything specific, like may the heart attack go away or I want this cancer to be healed. I simply adopted a may thy will be done approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this captures the surrender aspect that you just mentioned, where you appeal to a higher wisdom greater than your own. As an introvert, an unreconstructed introvert, I have real trouble telling the world what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I had rather rely on a higher wisdom when I pray for people.
Right.
May the best outcome prevail in this situation.
Yes.
May thy will be done. And I felt really comfortable about that.
Mine is direct my footsteps.
Yes.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
But thy will be done's pretty good, too.
It stood the test of time.
Yes. Good. I'm talking with prayer pioneer Dr. Larry Dossey. You admit that people pray ill will on others.
Yeah.
Does it work? When you pray ill will on others, that's not in alignment with that which is pure and genuine, is it?
No, I think it certainly isn't. The reason I made an issue of this thing about toxic prayer or negative prayer
right.
was a Gallup survey in 1993, which asked Americans how they pray. And in this survey, 5% of Americans said that they pray occasionally for harm for other people.
Wow.
If you do the numbers, that's over 10, 12 million people out there praying to harm other people. And the question better be, does that stuff work?
Yes.
You can't test it in people because it's illegal to do a study that looks to harm people.
Right.
So that can't be done. But what researchers have done is to, in the laboratory, explore whether or not people can have negative intentions and thoughts toward things like bacteria or plants or even animals.
Isn't that water experiment where they had froze the water and looked at the water and played rock music, different forms of music, placed it in?
It's related.
Mm-hmm.
But what most of these studies look at is whether or not you can increase the rate of bacterial growth in test tubes or harm them. You can reverse your healthy thoughts and try to harm the bacteria. And sure enough, people can work it either way. There are many of these studies on the books showing that people can influence living systems in a positive, healthful way or a negative way. I think that these studies demonstrate that we should take this idea of negative thoughts and intentions quite seriously.
Really?
You know, most
cultures
do. I would
think that you would only harm yourself doing that. I would think that that's living in the space where you talk about, that's the space of unforgiveness.
Yes.
Being unforgiving would only harm you because the other person's going on with their lives and you don't have any power over them.
I think you hit the nail on the head. And in many shamanic cultures, pre-modern cultures, there is a principle that you better be careful if you pray for harm for other people.
Yes.
Through curses, hexes, or spells or something like that, because of what's been called the boomerang effect.
Right.
This can come back and harm you and leave the other person unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
And so in folk cultures, this is accepted, that this does rebound to the person occasionally if they try to harm other people.
I wanted to go to the predictions. At the beginning of this show, I was talking about how when you first wrote Healing Words, what is it, 15 years ago?
Yes.
15 years ago. Yeah. Healing Words, the power of prayer and the practice of medicine, which really proved that prayer works and changed the way not only a lot of people in the world, but as you just explained to us, medical schools handle the issue of prayer. So now there are 90 medical schools that support the fact that prayer works.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to go down a list of some of the predictions. You said a new picture of human consciousness will emerge. No longer will it be considered an exclusive byproduct of the brain destined to die with the body. The recognition that there is some aspect of the human psyche that is genuinely non-local will lead to a transformation of our ideas of who we are. We will see that this non-local aspect of ourselves cannot die, for if non-local, it is infinite in space and time, and thus omnipresent and immortal by implications.
You know, for me, this is the richest implication of the whole deal. I'm all for praying for people to get better, and indeed they do, statistically mm-hmm. speaking. But this is more than just another tool in our black bag as doctors,
yes.
You know. The idea that we have some quality of consciousness that is non-local is the mm-hmm. word I love, but that's just a fancy word for infinite. We have some capacity to reach out through space and time to make a difference in the world. So these studies affirm the idea of the soul, and they point like an arrow to the possibility of survival of bodily death. I think this is the most significant outcome of this whole area of investigation. You know, our culture has been, I think, severely damaged by this assumption that it's all over with the death of the brain and body.
Yeah.
Total annihilation. That's the assumption of modern biology. These studies, the healing studies, point to something different.
You also say that this soul-like quality of human beings will no longer be just an assertion of religions to be accepted only through blind faith. It will be considered a legitimate implication of rational, empirical science.
This is so exciting.
Isn't
what
it?
We have here is a
yeah.
bridge between science and theology, which for generations, have fought each other bitterly over turf mm-hmm. battles and so on. But this offers an opportunity not for a total blending. I don't think we ought to try to homogenize science and spirituality, but at least a coming together, a shaking of hands, and a new dialogue. And it helps us harmonize two parts of who we are, the spiritually oriented aspect of ourselves and the rational, logical part of who we are. We can be whole, more whole as a result, I think, of honoring these studies.
And finally, you say, this understanding may lead to a transformation in the way we pray. No longer will we pray incessantly for things such as our health, but our prayers will be predominantly prayers of gratitude and thanksgiving, our proper response on realizing that the world at heart is more glorious, benevolent, and friendlier than we've recently supposed.
You know, this passage always reminds me of a statement of Einstein that the most important question a scientist can ask is the universe friendly? And I think by affirming immortality and an eternal aspect of who we are, these studies help us give a yes answer to Einstein's famous question, is the universe friendly?
Affirming immortality. Well, that's worth another discussion, I must say. We'll be joined again next week by Dr. Larry Dossey as we continue our conversation on the extraordinary healing power of ordinary things. Thank you for bringing healing words to our listeners today.
It's a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
15 years later. Thanks for joining us on Oprah and Friends, XM 156. See you next week. I love this talk, man. I love this talk. I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.